Hey, everybody. Welcome to another Commission podcast, Commission Bald Move podcast. This time, we are covering one of our favorite movies, or one of our favorite series. I don't know if this is your favorite movie, Aaron, but it is Star Wars A New Hope, Episode 4. It's commissioned by Andrew Mount. Thank you very much, Andrew, for commissioning this one. We really appreciate it. This is one of those that we probably never would have gotten to, just because everybody on the planet has talked about it, but we love this movie so much that we're happy when we saw the commission come up, I think, or at least I was.
No, I mean, this is ridiculous to get paid to watch Star Wars and talk about it. I mean, how many hours would you estimate that we personally have spent talking about Star Wars?
It's,
just between us.
It's too many to count. Really too many to count. I mean, hundreds.
I mean, that was one of the prime topics when we would go out in field service, because used to be Jehovah's Witness, if you didn't know. We would sit and annoy the older people with just talking about Star Wars, the latest books, the video games, the re-releases, the prequels. My God, we actually had serious debates about, you know, what would happen if Armageddon would come before the prequels were released.
Sure. Yeah.
Which is interesting. Is an interesting type of eschatology, Star Wars based eschatology, end of the world theories. I mean, I used to be such a huge Star Wars fan. I literally have read all the books up through about. I gave up halfway through the New Jedi Order because I just didn't like the Yuuzhan Vong.
Okay. Yeah.
Yuuzhan Vong or whatever their names are. But all the other stuff, even the like really shitty Barbara Hambley stuff.
What was that? Like Tales of the Bounty Hunter or something?
No, it was, I forget, but it's always the felt like Star Trek ones. It's kind of like, I want to say The Courtship of Princess Leia was a terrible book, but I don't remember it being terrible. I think it actually pretty good.
Yeah, I don't remember. The only trilogies that I really remember in any capacity from the EU.
The Crystal Star, wasn't that one of them?
That was one.
That's Yvonne the McIntyre, though, I think. But those were all like Star Trek novel authors who just wrote Star Trek for or Star Wars for pay, and I don't know.
Yeah, I remember the Timothy Zahn trilogy.
Sure.
I remember the Kevin J. Anderson Jedi Academy trilogy, I think it was called.
Which, my God, if you read that as an adult, is terrible.
I thought it was great when I was a kid.
I have fond memories of it. Yeah.
I liked it better than the Timothy Zahn stuff, so... Maybe that says something about me as a dumb kid.
I've played three different versions of the Star Wars role playing games.
Okay.
I mean, just about every Star Wars video game that came out before the prequels, I played.
Yeah.
Many hours.
That's the thing, that before the prequels, I was also a massive Star Wars fan, and I still think I am a big Star Wars fan, but I'm not fanatical in the way
it's in remission.
Yeah, that I was before the preview or the prequels, because the prequels really put. Kind of cast a pall over the entire series, I think.
You know, it's interesting. I think the prequels killed my fandom, and not the first one, because you'll remember...
Which is by far the worst.
That's debatable.
Well, I don't. Maybe not by far. The Clone Wars one is pretty shitty, too.
But I remember defending that. Like, look, you can't... There's nothing in this movie that was super bullshit, which is not true. That was just me putting blinders on. But you can't really judge this. I mean, this could make all perfect sense when you see movie 2 and 3.
Sure, it was a wait-and-see attitude, yeah.
And I think my fandom officially died somewhere in the weeks following the second prequel, Attack of the Clones.
Oh, wow.
Because it just sat in that, like... And I remember you guys were all just like, wow, that was a lot better than Phantom Menace. And I'm like, there's only one movie left. This can't be salvaged. That whole first movie was a fucking waste of screen time.
The realization that you had,
uh-huh.
we were having in the first movie. Like, you had it after Attack of the Clones because you were trying to give the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
And we were just like, wow, that Jar Jar stuff was terrible.
You know,
even though we were the fanboys that went and saw it seven times in the theaters, you get a few weeks out from that and you go, oh, God.
Yeah.
This is what Star Wars is now.
But, I mean, honestly, the only reason to remake the prequels was to go further into the, you know, life of Anakin Skywalker.
No, further into the pockets of the fans.
Yeah, yeah. But that's what I'm saying. The only legit artistic choice was to tell us more about that relationship between Obi-Wan and Anakin and how things went wrong. And the most important part, them becoming friends, was just kind of yada-yadded. Like, he went from little boy and annoyance to kind of a gadfly apprentice to in an elevator ride in the first scene of Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah,
a bunch of talks about the Clone Wars and how you guys are buddy buddy.
You're right. We didn't see them become friends, and that was kind of the crux of the relationship was the thing that was up in question,
right?
Between Obi-Wan and Anakin,
right?
You're right. That's the thing we wanted to see. That's one of the things we didn't get much of. We got a lot of pod races, man.
Let me add. So a lot of people say, and I'm not qualified to answer this particular question, but a lot of people say, well, Star Wars was always a children's film. Your problem is you're taking a 25 to 35 year old's sensibility and you're applying it to a seven. If you saw this as a 7 year old, it might be, you might prefer it to the old trilogy. And I wonder, because right now the 7 year olds who were in 1999 are in their mid 20s. And I would love to start to see the blogs and people like, I want to see the prequel trilogy defenders, the ones that are like,
these new Disney movies are going to be bullshit.
I suspect that that's bullshit because I feel like the Star Wars was an all ages film.
I feel like it was too, because I know my dad loved it. My dad is 40 years older than me. So.
My dad loved it. I was too young to see the first one in the movies. I did. I was 5-6 years old when Empire came out, and I remember standing in line with my dad to see it at the local theater. And hilariously, I had to go pee right in the middle of Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker's lightsaber battle.
Oh, no. Did you miss the I Am Your Father?
We came back when he was, basically clinging to... He's got one hand chopped off. He's clinging to the weather vane.
Impossible.
No, he'd already jumped and done that. And
my God, he's hanging out at the bottom of
Bespin. So missed the whole
thing,
and my dad's, like, tight-lipped and just, like... And it's, like, the next day, he left me at home and went to see the whole movie by himself.
Oh, my God.
But, no, I'm a long-term Star Wars fan. I just...
Yeah, yeah.
And it's probably still lurking there, but I don't know.
Yeah, I was definitely a kid when I saw them, too. I never saw them in the theaters. I wasn't old enough. When I was being born, the last one was just being released.
Right.
So I got into them through my dad, who did go see them
sure.
when they were out in the theaters. And he was a little bit older than I am now when he's seeing those things.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think if I had seen Star Wars for the first time. The thing is, when Star Wars came out, there was nothing else like it. It's so hard to say, like, here's a film about space, like a space opera sort of thing, and that's a unique idea. Like, getting that through my head is impossible because I've seen so many of those.
Right.
Now.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I've tried to kind of revisit the trilogies with my son.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just sees it as another form of entertainment that is, you know, it's cool or is this or that, but, you know.
He's seen video games,
that's
man.
The thing. Like, entertainment has moved so far beyond.
Can't keep them on the farm once they see Aunt Beru's head collection. I mean, video games.
Yeah. But it's interesting because he's really into things that I'm not, different things. Like, his kind of Star Wars is Mega Man.
Yeah, yeah.
He's obsessed with the comics. He loves the video games. He just about lost his mind when we saw the new Super Smash Brothers had a Mega Man in there. But I'm curious to see what happens to the 7-year-olds in 99. I don't even know where to begin on this because I've seen this movie at least 100 times.
I don't know that I've seen it that many times, but it's up there.
We watched the... special editions, also known as the shitty
theaters.
Ones.
Yep.
There's a lot of versions out there. You can see if you can pay for. I think the 2008 release came with DVDs that have the original copies, but I also heard they were like pan and scan versions.
Oh, yeah,
and just really shitty quality. So there are, if you go extra legal methods, there's a rip of the original. Laser discs. There's blends where they've taken the things that people kind of enjoy about the prequels, like, or not the prequels, the special editions, like the space battles.
Yeah, yeah.
I am not one going to argue that the space battles of the special editions are not superior.
I think they're better. Yeah.
But then they take the Han shot first bullshit out and the
stepping
on Jabba's tail, the Cantina remakes, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Can
I tell you a story of why these movies are so. Important to me.
Please do.
It's the first time I remember ever getting honestly excited by movies. When I was a kid, you want to talk about shitty versions of this movie. Here's the version that I grew up watching. my aunt and uncle had a massive VHS collection. And these weren't like VHS that you bought at the store. These were like, we recorded this off TV VHS.
That
tapes.
One time it was on ABC, Sunday Night Family Movie. We grabbed it.
So they have this massive thing of movies, just like shelf after shelf after shelf in their house.
All labeled in pencil or pen.
Yep, all labeled, all with sleeves. All they had it done up nice. and I had just seen Star Wars recently, because we moved back from California. Like, I must have seen this when I was 10 or when I was like 8 for the first time.
So you're too young for even Jedi.
I had seen it. Yeah, yeah. I had seen it in California before we came back and thought it was cool. And then we came back and I saw their collection. The first thing I looked for in there was Star Wars. And that to me identifies, I identify that as the moment where I realized, oh, I'm a Star Wars fan. Mm. You know, like I poured through their collection. I'm like, it's got to be in here. It's got to be in here. 500 tapes later, I find it, you know, just looking through because I'm too dumb as a kid to realize, oh, alphabetical order means I should go to the S's. Mm-hmm. And I picked out all these movies and I took them. I begged with them, please let me borrow these. Let me take these home and watch them, because they were very protective of their VHS collection as well.
Sure.
So I brought those home and I watched them over and over and over again. It was first time I remember myself being a fan of anything, any media like that.
Interesting. So let's just have a discussion here. What's your favorite Star Wars? How do you rank them?
Oh man. So I rank them from best to worst: Empire, New Hope, Return of the Jedi, Revenge of the Sith, Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones.
Wow. Attack of the Clones is worse than Phantom Menace. Why?
Cause it could have been the savior, I guess, like you're saying. But honestly, there's just so much bullshit in Attack of the Clones.
Yeah.
Like, that's the stuff with Padme that completely doesn't work.
And her chemistry
so
with Hayden
awkward
Christensen.
And stiff, and it's just terrible dialogue left and right in that thing.
Yeah.
Like you said earlier, we don't see the parts of the story we really want to see. I don't know. I mean, aside from Jar Jar, I don't think Phantom Menace is that terrible. I mean, yeah, there's some midichlorian bullshit and some dumb stuff, but Attack of the Clones, man, aside from the awesome battle scenes that go on too long.
And that's the thing, they're not even that awesome.
They're technically impressive. They are not good from a storytelling standpoint.
Sure. And I don't even know.
But everything else is terrible.
Yeah, it's like there's something that's fundamentally less real about Mos Eisley, for example, in the prequel trilogies and in the remixed versions.
Yeah, yeah.
Where, like, you know, we were talking, we were watching this. Mos Eisley is not a bustling metropolis. Mm-hmm. It's a wretched scum or hive of scum and villainy. It is not suburban sprawl.
Yeah.
It is not like Macy's during the Christmas shopping season. There's just too much.
There are two places. If you go to Tatooine.
Yeah.
And you're going to Mos Eisley, there are two places you want to be.
Yeah.
You want to either be in the dock with your ship,
yeah,
just unloading, or you go straight to the cantina. There is no other place in Mos Eisley that you want to go.
Right.
And so why are so many people walking around? Why are they bringing these massive animals? What are those for?
I mean, I get it that it's a spaceport and it's probably center of trade and everything, but is Tatooine a backwater shithole or is it not?
Right.
Like, it's supposed to be kind of like an old saloon town. Yeah. In the Wild West, but it comes off as, like I said, some kind of damn strip mall.
Yeah, it works
during
much better.
Black Friday.
It works much better in the original version, where it's very sparsely populated.
Why is Star Wars so good? That's by the way, that's my ranking too, except for I actually put Return of the Jedi above A New Hope.
Really? Is it all just the Vader and Luke stuff?
Yes. Because
you hate the Ewok stuff, don't you?
Yes, especially when you think that... I mean, that was the first time I think Lucas really took a misstep, because in the original scripts, I've heard that the Ewoks were supposed to be a Wookiee, like, slave camp.
Yeah, which makes a lot more sense when they're fighting these giant robots.
Can you imagine, like, you know, an army of Wookiees tearing stormtroopers' limbs off? That would be rad. Mm-hmm. But instead, we cut them in half, reversed the name as, you know, again, typical too cute Lucas fashion, and got Ewoks. But I like Return of the Jedi mostly because all the Jabba sequence is gold.
Yeah.
Every bit of Jabba the Hutt is, and the Sarlacc pit is awesome. And I really, really, really like this final lightsaber duel between Vader and Luke. I think that pushes it over. It's the best lightsaber battle in the series, as far as I'm concerned. We'll get to that later as well.
Okay.
Why do you think Star Wars, the old stuff, is so good, the original trilogy?
Well, a couple of reasons. A, because technically it was a very impressive movie at the time. I mean, everybody who saw that was like, I didn't even know that they could do this on a screen. I feel like I'm there. And you know, I feel like the practical effects of that make it so much more real, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, too.
Yeah.
That's one reason. The other reason for me is it is a fairly classic adventure story. Uh-huh. You know, it's in the same ilk as like Indiana Jones. Any of the really solid just adventure movies that you've seen, it's a fun ride. And I think more so than Return of the Jedi, as a kid and a teenager watching this, that's what I was looking for. This fun ride, this thing that I could put myself into and, you know, escape the everyday and be in a fantasy world. I feel like it delivered that better to me than Return of the Jedi did.
I mean, it's got everything. If you're a little kid, what do you want to do? You want to see exotic things. You want to sword fight. You want to shoot guns. You want to go fast in airplanes and spaceships and save princesses and hang around in dangerous situations with like super adult trappings, like the Mos Eisley Cantina. Mm-hmm. It just hits all those marks.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because if you look at the making of the first Star Wars, how haphazard it was and how the London film crew just thought this was ridiculous schlock.
Uh-huh.
And like Lucas was just getting torn. You know, nobody believed in him. And the actors all thought he was this little twerpy guy who didn't know how to direct anything. And it's kind of amazing that it came together. But you had like the genesis of ILM. You had Ralph McQuarrie doing all this design work.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like he should get a lot of credit for this thing's success. Because when you're talking about the visual effects and the models and stuff, that's stuff he all designed.
Yeah.
And then you had really talented model makers. Like, imagine someone gave you the task of building the Millennium Falcon.
Huh.
And the legend has it that George Lucas basically bit a bite out of a Big Mac and said, I want it to look like this. You take that and you build this incredibly detailed model that's got they're gluing battleship parts to it and you know, curling iron bits and all this weird stuff.
Yeah.
Everything was based in reality. Like, you know, Luke Skywalker's lightsabers, famously a handle for a flash for a particular old-timey piece of camera equipment.
Yeah, with a broomstick shoved in the end.
Which old-time camera equipment people, I guess, hate Star Wars fans because they're making these parts impossible to find.
Yeah, and they tear them up, too.
There's a particular...
making the hilt.
There's like a particular type of Volkswagen... Mm-hmm. Wiper blade refill that is the cooling fins on the stormtroopers' assault rifles.
Oh my god.
I mean, all this stuff is just shit they got out of a junkyard. Like, think about the Jawa interior of their sandcrawler.
Oh yeah.
That's
yeah.
just shit that they're buying at a junkyard and welding stuff together. Mm-hmm. And I just think whoever designed like C-3PO and R2-D2, Ralph McQuarrie, is a goddamn genius.
Yeah,
all the stuff.
It has a very rugged aesthetic to it, and that's what I like. Everything feels used. This doesn't feel like a universe. Like, when you're fighting rebels who are this force that is barely scraping by, it's a ragtag group, you want everything to feel weathered and used.
Sure.
And that sensibility really shows in this movie. Whereas it feels like in the prequels, none of that is the case. There is not a loose bolt anywhere.
Yeah.
And it makes it feel less authentic to me.
Yeah, and...
Even in the most obsessed cities with cleanliness, you walk down the street, you see busted up things.
Right.
I mean, everything is not made of marble and pristine, and it just doesn't feel real like these movies do.
But I just think of, when I think of like all the aliens, all the robots or droids, all the spaceships that had to be designed and then built, and just like the custom variants, the costume of Darth Vader, the stormtroopers, Chewbacca's, not the Tauntauns, but the Banthas.
Mm.
They're Asian elephants with a Muppet head stuck on them, and they look the tits, man. They look the tits.
They look like some crazy alien creature.
they are utterly convincing in a way the CGI dewbacks, like, you know, crocodile and up, do not look convincing. Yeah.
No, you just can't get. And I noticed, like, R2-D2 walking around or rolling around.
Yeah.
He doesn't roll around perfectly. He's not, like, he has loose joints and he has like wheels with a little bit of damage. So he kind of bobbles around when he rolls. That feels real. Whereas the prequels just take all that out.
C-3PO's right lower leg is a different color than the rest of his body.
Right?
Because he apparently got some damage and got thrown back together because it's the Rebels. And he's got a dent in his head.
Yeah. And his ass.
He's got
a big dent on his hip.
Exactly. And I just am amazed. The music. John.
That's what does it. I feel like half of this movie is music and half of this movie is Ralph McQuarrie stuff.
Yeah, I mean, John Williams and Ralph McQuarrie, I hope they were well taken care of by George Lucas. I mean, obviously, Johnny Williams is a successful musician in his own right.
Yeah, I mean, to this day, the Star Wars soundtrack is still unrivaled, in my opinion, the score.
If I'm doing something I consider badass in my head, I'm probably humming some type of Star Wars soundtrack.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of times, asteroid music.
Okay.
You know, the that kind of stuff when Hans. It seems like that, like, top down, it didn't work because I've always heard that Lucas was an ineffectual director. His writing was shitty. He had these great ideas, but very little ability to communicate him. But somehow he lucked into this cast with, like, Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford. Accidentally, you know, one of the most charismatic, successful leading men in Hollywood history.
Yeah.
And they just made it work.
Sure. I mean, so much of this is sold on the performance of Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher. I think Mark Hamill does a hell of a job, too.
Right.
But specifically, Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher just have this presence on screen that is undeniable, and it's magnetic.
I mean, so many.
Think about what Star Wars is. So I feel like Star Wars, the original trilogy, is a very different beast than Star Wars, you know, the prequels, because the story I built up in my head is that Lucas said, okay, with this New Hope thing, this is a one-off project. I'm going to make the movie I want to make. And I may never get another movie gig in the rest of my life, but God damn it, I'm going to make this movie. So he makes the movie, and he puts in smugglers, and he puts in violence, and he puts in killing, and all of these kind of adult themes, the kind of things that he's probably thinking about as a 20-year-old or whatever he was at the time. And he says, okay, this is a cool movie, and everybody loves the movie. And then he goes into the prequels with a very different attitude, the attitude of this is my legacy, and I feel like there's a huge merchandising opportunity. Like he saw, okay, I own the rights to this thing, even in like Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, especially Return of the Jedi. Right. He's like, I see a big marketing and merchandising opportunity. I'm going to cater to that. And he made it more for kids.
Mm.
It feels to me like he made it more for kids on purpose, because that first movie is not for kids necessarily.
Well, it's not only for kids.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's actually got some things that are pretty scary for kids. Like we talked about.
It does. Yeah.
You know, you see Aunt Owen.
And that's why I say it's not really for kids.
Aunt Beru and Uncle Owen's burnt out, charred skeletons laying outside their homes, where the stormtroopers drug them out and incinerated them.
Yeah.
That's pretty horrific if you're a 5-year-old watching Star Wars.
Especially because it's real.
Yeah.
It looks real.
Yeah.
Like those skeletons, I mean, granted, they're not human skeletons, but they're laying there burnt up with meat, grilled meat all over them. It's disgusting.
I feel like the childhood entertainment that really grabs you as a kid has that right mix of fun, humor, and danger.
Yeah.
Like Goonies and Star Wars and Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's like Raiders of the Lost Ark is really awesome and cool, and then ghosts fly out of the Ark and melt Nazi faces off, and you're like, you know, God, like everything's been pitched kind of slow ball until you get to that. And then it's like, God damn, where is my parents' lap so I can scramble up on it? And
whereas I just don't feel like Revenge of the Sith, when Anakin falls in the lava, has that same weight to it.
And it's just, you know, kind of gross.
And they haven't established the relationships enough and all that stuff.
Obi-Wan Kenobi's a massive dick. Like, you know, I'm leaving you here at this pit of lava to burn to death slowly, Anakin. But you're the asshole. Don't forget, you're the asshole, Anakin. I mean, what the fuck?
Well, he did kill a bunch of kids.
So while we're psychoanalyzing George Lucas, I want to put him on a couch for a minute.
Okay.
Here's what I've seen. I feel like George Lucas was a very gifted filmmaker. That seems to be that question. I mean, if you listen to the Godfather director commentary or read any history about it, George Lucas did a lot to make the Godfather better in editing. And he really has a flair for getting really interesting, cool visual storytelling on camera. And he made a really awesome movie, just like you said. But then I think he started reading his own press. And if you look at his interviews, he went from, well, you know, I was just making, I need to puff out my neck. I was making this, you know, homage to the Buck Rogers and the old time serials and that stuff to, well, I intentionally employed the archetypes of Carl Jung and who's the heroes?
Joseph Campbell.
And I studied under Joseph Campbell, and I crafted the perfect Judeo-Christian myth for our time.
Reluctant like, hero and all that stuff,
And I he started to believe that, but none of that was true. That was people analyzing his film 20 years after the fact, telling him. And I almost feel like he lost the connection to why people loved his movie. Like, he's insulated by, you know, these Lucasfilm higher-ups and executive producers, and he doesn't really talk with fans, and if he does talk with fans, they're all starstruck. And you, the thing that's really heartbreaking about watching a prequel expanded material, like the makings of...
Bonus features.
Maybe. Is how everyone seems kind of bummed. Like, you know, they're
when they're screening stuff.
And also, like, the artists themselves, like, Lucas is coming through, and they've got all these different busts of alien heads that these people have worked on for weeks, you can tell. And he's just like, yes, no, no. And not really, just kind of like, he had this, like GL, he just, like, scribbled GL on something if he liked it. And it just felt kind of soulless.
Yeah, you can't be that far removed from it and still have any input into it, you know?
Also, George Lucas, I do not believe that you had the prequel trilogy written in any kind of treatsy form or anything way back from the beginning. Yeah. I don't believe you had Empire in mind. I don't believe you had Return of the Jedi. I don't believe any of that bullshit.
Yeah, yeah. I might believe that he had maybe a bigger universe in his head that he was thinking about, but as to any concrete stories, that's skeptical. I don't know. There are a lot of other things about the prequels. I don't want to talk too much about the prequels versus the original trilogy, because really we're here to talk about A New Hope.
I think we're here to talk about Star Wars.
Well, he commissioned A New Hope.
There's a couple observations. Okay. Some of them are nitpicky, some of them are cool. But I think that's one of the things we love to do as kids is, like, you know, talk about inconsistencies in the movie or poke fun at it and make our own little inside joke. So... Let's talk about Jedi robes. So this is going to be a tenuous prequel connection. Obi-Wan Kenobi and Aunt Beru and Uncle Owen are dressed like desert nomads of Tatooine. That's a look that they all have. And if you go into Mos Eisley, the bartender was wearing the same kind of tunic, and Luke's wearing like the junior wear version of that thing. And it makes sense because they're kind of got this like semi Bedouin gimmick. Why did George Lucas decide to adopt that as a Jedi uniform?
You're right. It's not
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
It's not the other way around, where that is the Jedi uniform and he used it.
Is in hiding on Tatooine, running around in a Jedi uniform. Did the Nazis?
You would want to do the exact opposite.
Did the Nazis that made it to Argentina go around goose stepping in their SS uniforms? I doubt it. What do you mean I'm a Nazi? That's a horrible thing for you to say.
Well, there's a swastika on your arm, man. As a matter of fact, on both arms, and that's why I think so. So is it possible? I'm going to play devil's advocate, because I totally agree with you. That's insane, and that's just a mistake on his part. Is it possible that Obi-Wan knew that this is a planet full of people who dress like Jedis, and so he would blend in there?
Maybe the Jedi uniform designer... was a frustrated fashionista from Tatooine.
Could be.
They were inspired by the local people.
Yeah. Went back to his roots for the Jedi collection.
Something else I noticed in the garage scene where 3PO gets pulled out of the oil, his cock piece is right behind Luke's head.
It's codpiece.
Cockpiece.
Sure. Yep.
And he just is aggressively buffing it the entire scene. Like, he's got a right. He'd be wiping down his whole body. It's not. A codpiece has got to shine. That thing.
And the usefulness of a codpiece on a robot. Robot is a little suspect.
He's bearing his midriff. I mean, come on. Yep. We saw that he could run around without the plating.
There's another questionable droid or questionable droid function in the Jawa sandcrawler. What is the vacuum tube for? The vacuum tube can clearly only be used
for astromech
droids like R2, R5. Maybe you get one of those other couple of droids in there, but you're not getting C-3PO in that thing.
Yeah,
you're not getting the thing with the arms coming off the
top.
Hell
no, the little half dome with all the Swiss Army knives coming out of it.
It seems like a fairly useless piece of gear for the Jawas. When you consider that they have a ramp on the back that they all use to get into the ship.
They do a lot of...
Or on the side.
They do a lot of work with astromechs, man. Astromechs are highly sought after in the desert.
Actually, if you think about it, well, they're probably not sought after in the desert, but they are sought after in fighter planes, in fighter vehicles. Maybe there are a lot of them running around.
So if you want to ponder another in-universe question, is there enough droids stumbling around the wastelands of Tatooine that Jawas can drive these massive crawlers around and be profitable hunting them?
Uh-huh.
That's what they do, right?
I
love the idea
that
so many ships have broken down and crash landed and whatnot, that there's just these tribes of droids migrating through the desert.
Yeah, no, that's interesting, especially when you consider the changes that he made in the remastered versions, you know, special edition, to have a lot more hulking space junk in Tatooine and Mos Eisley.
Right.
So maybe there is more of that lurking around than we think.
You know what's super fun to do in the movies, especially after prequels come out, is parse all the heap of lies that Obi-Wan tells Luke Skywalker. Like, I don't think he says an honest word to this boy the entire living time he spent with him.
Yeah. And even when he tells him to switch off the targeting computer, that seems suspect.
Sure.
To me. Even after his death, he's still lying to the kid. The Force is way better than that computer, which is designed specifically for that task, Luke.
Right. Like, we have...
Are you sure, Kenobi? Because I can see pretty... This thing's kind of awesome.
Yeah, I don't know, like, 1990s United States cruise missile technology was adequate to hit this exhaust port. Maybe stick with that instead of your mystical religious force, but...
Yeah.
But,
I, overall, that's cool. I won't... Like, I'm not a fan of fantasy shit, certainly, and magic is one of the least favorite things of mine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I give The Force a pass. Maybe it's because
it's
I saw it when I was so young, but it's also mixed in with sci-fi. But it's not sci-fi, right? The Force is not sci-fi.
And it felt like it was...
Despite the midichlorians, it is not sci-fi.
It had very firm limits of what it could and could not do.
Sure.
It could, like, boost your innate abilities, but you couldn't, like, fly through space...
Yeah.
You couldn't shoot heat vision at your eyes, although you could, we find out in the third one, shoot lightning bolts at your fingers.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like Jedi can be killed. It's not like, your problem with Thor in the Avengers, where it's like, this is a god. He just got stabbed.
Who cares?
He in mortal danger? Does he need like a Band-Aid?
Is he going to grow back like Wolverine?
Yeah.
Like, I just don't know.
Right. And like the Hulk just picked up a god by his ankles and thrashed him. Is that possible? Does that mean Hulk can beat Thor? What's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
I think a little of that goes out the window in the prequels because...
The midichlorian stuff, they're...
Not just that,
that's a bad explanation for the Force.
The Jedis are flying around like Peter Pan magic pixies.
Oh, yeah.
It kind of cheapens a lot of the stuff we see in... and Lucas has always lampshaded that. It's like, well, we've only seen an old man and a crippled cyborg and a young untrained boy. But I...
Yeah, you're talking about the lightsaber battles?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like in A New Hope, Darth Vader's like 40.
Probably.
He's kind of in the prime of his life. He's a half
close
cyborg, which I guess impacts his Force ability, but he's also one of the strongest Force users in the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling me he can't like do a spinning flip to get the drop on old Obi-Wan?
Certainly he could beat Obi-Wan.
800-year-old Yoda can fly off walls like a lethal pinball machine, but Obi-Wan can't do anything more than a single knee spin that he needed a stunt double for?
I guess not. Yeah, it's, I don't know. The prequel fights are certainly flashier, but they serve less of a purpose too, right?
Sure.
It felt like in the prequels, the fights became about the fights, whereas the fights were never about the fights in A New Hope, in the original trilogy.
Rank the lightsaber battles of the movies, best or worst. Oh,
Jesus.
And not everyone. We don't need to talk about the cantina arm scene.
Although I do want to talk about that scene, because that's awesome.
Okay. We'll go into Obi-Wan as such a fucking badass after this segment.
Man, I really like the one from Empire Strikes Back,
where
he goes out the window. But Return of the Jedi's lightsaber in the dark with the blades just whirling
around.
Vader
taunting about your sister.
It's so fucking cool.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
As far as the emotion and Luke just rage as he's beat. I mean, that's the thing. You realize it's his father, so you've got that whole...
No, sorry. I'm talking about the one at the end of Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, well,
the one where they put
you.
Han in the carbonite.
Okay. That is visually the most interesting and striking.
I love that.
Because, my God, that set.
Yeah.
Wow. But I think Return of the Jedi is more powerful emotionally.
Palpatine, back
he's trying to protect his sister.
And...
He's being tested morally.
It's his father. Yeah.
He has to murder him or his father.
That's the thing. And the fight is not about the fight, right? The fight is about everything that's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
He has to win this fight in order for his goal to succeed. He doesn't have to spin his lightsaber around 15 times.
Right. And the fact that that's not a trick. Like, the dark side's no joke.
Yeah.
Like, Luke kicked Vader's ass, which he's never been able to manage before, with the dark side.
Yeah.
And then he got the shit chucked out of him.
And what does that mean for Luke? Like,
and then his old man having the last minute redemption and throwing the Emperor to his death? That shit's great. That's gold.
Yeah.
Best lightsaber fight for me.
This is probably the worst lightsaber fight in A New Hope.
Yeah.
It's two old men and one old man and a robot going at it.
I don't know.
They're not jumping around.
The Dooku Yoda Obi-Wan.
It went on too long.
It's stuff. To me, that's the worst one. It's just silly shit.
You know, it's funny because I think it was there where everybody like stood up and cheered. When Yoda just went off.
That was really cool.
Yeah.
It was really cool, but it breaks so many things. That's a lot of things about the prequels. Like, there's a lot of individual cool moments, but they betray a lot of things that happen later. Let's talk about Obi-Wan being a badass.
Okay. My first inclination that I got of Obi-Wan being a badass is when he walks into a cantina.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, when he mind controls the stormtroopers.
Sure.
Into letting them through. I'm like, oh, shit. He's got some powers.
If you're Luke, you're like perking up and taking notice.
Yeah. Like, what the hell did you just do there?
Uh-huh.
But then when he walks into that cantina... And he goes to the bar, he's talking to Chewie while there's some horrible shit going on behind him and around him.
Yeah.
He spins around, he chops a man's arm off.
Right. After first smoothly trying to be like, this little one's not worth your trouble. Let me buy you a drink.
Yeah, not his fault.
Yeah.
Not his fault. But, you know, when business needs to be done, he'll do business.
He's negotiating with a 7-foot-tall Wookiee, smoothly turns around to kind of, you know... smooth over this problem. Lots of smooths described with Obi-Wan.
Yep, he smoothly chops his arm off. And then he picks up a drink, he goes over to the corner, stays in the same bar where he has just murdered a man.
Yeah.
Goes to the corner and has a conversation, negotiates with a smuggler over the price of passage to Alderaan.
Right.
Like, the fact that he doesn't leave that bar immediately after getting into that altercation just means he's a badass. Like,
yeah.
There's nobody in this bar who can do anything to me.
Yes,
so.
Let the stormtroopers go.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Did you know Alec Guinness in real life was kind of a dick about Star Wars?
What do you mean?
Like, he was shitty to the fans. And in his mind, they were a bunch of uncultured... Like, this man has been in Lawrence of Arabia.
Movie, though. Don't tell me I'm uncultured for liking a movie you're in.
But he did this, like, as a... He thinks it's like a kid's movie he did for money and the tail end of his career. And everyone knows him for that. And I think it drove him crazy.
Yeah. So he didn't respect.
And he
the
said,
movie
"It's like I feel sad for people that are like, you know, he would describe us as sad. I've got a Lego Darth Vader here. You've got a 3-foot-tall Darth Vader. I have a Darth Vader coffee mug. Mm-hmm. He would consider us sad individuals. You have Tauntauns roaming on the desk over there.
I do.
He would consider us sad individuals.
Are we sad? Have you ever considered the fact that you might be sad? Do you want to get existential on this podcast?
When I do consider the bone-crushing depression I experience on a day-by-day basis,
You know, Alec Guinness was right.
Sir Guinness might be in the right. But no, it's like I always feel like that's sad, you know? He feels like, I feel like he was a sadder, more cranky old man than I am a sad, pathetic, middle-aged man.
Yeah, yeah.
I know we're not supposed to talk about, well, this is not prequels. This is the special edition.
Okay.
The Jabba scene. That fucking thing is not Jabba the Hutt.
Nah.
Did George Lucas not have a picture of Jabba the Hutt when he's asking people to make a digital model of Jabba?
Uh-huh.
They didn't get the color. They didn't get the texture. They didn't get his sheer girth.
Yeah, it's sad. I feel like all of the practical effects work so much better than any of the special effects that he does. The visual, digital effects.
Like, he steps on Jabba the Hutt's tail. And I understand the logistical reasons why, because when they originally shot that film of Jabba the Hutt, who was just a fat man, fat, short man.
Just a dude, yeah.
Han did a walk around him, and, well, Jabba's got a tail. Why did he put that scene in? Because Han walking on Jabba's tail is the equivalent of, like, Sollozzo tweaking the Godfather's nose in The Godfather. Like when the Godfather's like, thank you, but we can't do business. If he's like, whoop, 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 poink in the eye. Like, the fuck?
When you're negotiating. You don't do that to the Godfather. Boss, yeah, you don't want to step on their tail.
He's got Boba Fett in the room. He's got all those bounty hunters.
This is not a moment to show how big your balls are.
Like, recognize that you made Jabba into a much bigger deal in the third movie.
Yeah.
And you cannot go, you cannot have your hero just step on his tail like it's nothing.
Yeah.
Don't put that.
This is a man who will kill someone, or a beast who will kill someone for not impressing him with their dancing.
Like, if you want to, if you want to include that as a deleted scene, because a lot of fans are clamoring over some of this deleted footage we've heard about for years and years, fine, but don't make your movie shittier to put it in the main narrative. It just, it never made sense why he did that.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't like that very much. Han shot first.
Oh, Jesus.
We can talk about that, but I mean, that's just silly. That's all over the kid stuff, right? Like, I can't have Han being a bad guy.
And it was terribly executed.
Why not? Han is a smuggler. Han's probably a fucking horrible guy to a lot of people.
And this guy was threatening him with a gun. It's not like he just murdered a bus full of nuns.
It's not like he spun around and chopped a guy's arm off in a bar fight.
Yeah, yeah. Han would never shoot a gun unless someone shot at him at point-blank range.
It's silly. And that's unfortunate.
So ham-fistedly done as far as a technical angle, too.
Yeah.
God damn.
There are a lot of things that I really love about this movie, and the reason why it's my second favorite is it is just a solid adventure movie, right? Like, I feel like I could be Luke. Like, it hits you at an age when you're saying, oh, I'm probably going to be that age someday.
Yeah.
I see where he's stuck with these two authority figures who won't let him do anything. I want to be Luke.
Sure.
I want to go out there and explore everything.
Sure.
And so you identify with Luke, and he has a hell of an adventure.
Yeah.
Right? Ends up saving the day. And I feel like if you identify at all with Luke in this movie, you're going to love it.
And before we move away from Tatooine, like, there's some scenes that just work on that particular level. Like, Luke going out at sunset, the twin sun settings, and he looks as John Williams' theme, Luke theme,
beautiful moment,
or the Force theme, or whatever, because it wells up. I mean, that's just an awesome cinematic movie.
Yeah.
And Star Wars, yes, it is an adventure film in the, like, Raiders of the Lost Ark vein, but it flirts, and Empire gets there. It flirts with greatness.
Yeah.
Like, that twin sun scene is just awesome. Him finding Aunt Owen and Uncle Beru, Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru.
Yeah, yeah, that's a
blue milk spilt everywhere
scene. Another really depressing scene is when they miss that first shot on the exhaust port on the Death Star, and you see the reactions of everybody in command, and you're like, oh my God, we might not even get a second shot at this, and the thing's coming around the bend.
Right.
Somebody do something.
Yeah.
And then Luke, the guy who I identify with, comes rolling in to save the day. And you get multiple people saving the day, you know? Han saves the day.
His best friend dies in the assault.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which we didn't appreciate. That was
a bittersweet moment at the end for him.
One of the edits that probably hurt the most, there's a scene in the novelization of A New Hope, which of course I've read.
With them on Tatooine.
Where Biggs is talking about, you know, he's back from the academy or whatever, and he's like, you should join up. And he's like, oh, you know, we're best friends, but I'm stuck in this goddamn moisture farm business. it would be cool to establish them as a true friendship.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not a bad part. And we got a little Biggs in the special edition. I like the expanded Biggs.
Uh-huh.
The porn star stash Biggs.
Sure.
Let's talk about a couple other things I notice.
Okay.
Obi-Wan got his own smuggling compartment.
He does.
When they're getting tractor beamed into the Death Star, Obi-Wan gets his own compartment. Luke, Han, and a 7-foot-tall Wookiee are shoved in the other.
Well, Chewbacca tried to get in, and he was like, this is not the compartment you're looking for. Send him over the other one.
That's right. Not seat taken. Sorry. I need some, my robes need room to breathe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I got a lightsaber in here. What do you want?
One thing that I've noticed for a long time and is gratified that they kept in the special editions, because I'm not sure, is in the scene where the stormtroopers are storming the room that 3PO and R2-D2 have got themselves locked in the closet. Like, the second stormtrooper from the right, on the right column that's marching in, smacks his head on the bulkhead coming in the door and doesn't miss a beat. Like, that is a VIP extra. He about got his head clean taken off and kept marching, and that movie is in every version of Star Wars, as far as I'm aware of.
As far as I can tell, yeah.
If you haven't seen it, you got to watch it just for that, just to see that moment.
Yeah, there are a lot of bloopers in there. Stuff that they just kept in, and I wonder if that's because they didn't have the budget to do a whole bunch of takes,
yeah,
or if that's like a mischievous editor going in and saying, oh, here's something nobody will ever notice, and sure, I think it's funny, so I'm gonna keep it in.
Well, so, I was wondering, like, you know, does that imply that it was a only take?
Yeah, it might.
Like, there's just some second unit footage. We need stormtroopers coming in this room. Roll it. Okay, we got it. We're running behind. We're over budget. Let's go.
It could also imply that's the best take, which means maybe like all of the stormtroopers hit their heads on the door as they came in the previous take.
The door is ludicrously low. It's like 6 foot tall.
It is, yeah.
So it's too short to be a stormtrooper. I think stormtroopers were genetically bred to be short just to navigate the hobbit-sized corridors of the Death Star.
Yeah, Vader walking through that ship must be a nightmare.
Yeah. Isn't it funny that the Death Star seems like a real set?
It does.
Although, if you really think about the scale of the Death Star, like, Darth Vader is just walking around on this, you know, Russian nesting doll shell of a space station the size of a moon. He's just walking around. He's walking around, and no matter where he goes, he's exactly the space he wants to be. I need to go to Obi-Wan. I'm going to walk there. I need to talk to my elite Starfeeder wing. I'm going to walk there. I got to take a conference call.
So it's quite the coincidence. It's pretty convenient that Obi-Wan landed very near where Vader was on the ship. And that the hangar for Vader is near where he killed Obi-Wan.
Sure.
All of that stuff. The tractor beams are close to the hangar bay.
Those elevators are something else. They must just be able to travel at like the speed of sound and get you wherever you need to go.
Yeah.
Because elsewise, the just walking around is not doing it. Also, the light kind of duty doors shut with alarming guillotine-like speed and efficiency.
They do.
The blast doors take their own sweet-ass time to shut.
Yeah. The doors you really want to close quickly.
Yeah. If you want to slam a bathroom door in someone's face, you got that shit covered. And don't get your nose in the doorway.
You could probably kill them with it.
You could probably kill them with it. You need to keep out hostile invaders storming your battle station.
Better have an hour's notice.
Yeah. Then to get Tim Taylor in there, give that shit more power.
For sure.
Let's see. We made a ton of e-cig jokes.
Oh, yeah.
Because we noticed that every single Imperial officer has like an array, a vast array of high-end vaporizers on their sleeves and their shirt pocket.
Yeah.
I just feel like the whole Death Star smells like blueberry peach. Because they're just vaping. It's just, there's just fog in every corridor, in every compartment. Hell, sure. Luke's got three.
Luke, yeah.
And
they're full of 36 milligram. Those are high powered.
That's
e-cigs.
They have the equivalent of like a 6-pack of Marlboro Red.
Well, that's how Luke gets from farm boy to Return of the Jedi Luke in that amount of time. He's just hard drinking, hard smoking, smuggling son of a bitch.
I never got, because everyone's like, you know, Mark Hamill had a car accident in between A New Hope and Return of the Jedi, Empire Strikes Back, and you know, there's a lot of problems. Luke didn't look like Luke, and I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Luke looks like Luke.
Do you think Mark Hamill's like, fuck you guys, I'm not a monster? They're like, oh, we need him to have his face get mauled by a wampa so people will buy it. Like, get the fuck out of here.
Can it also chew on him? Because it's not just not enough yet.
He's like 60,
I don't buy it.
He's like 65 years old now. He does not look like Luke now.
Yeah, yeah.
But so there's another point. The new trilogy, the J.J. Abrams trilogy.
Yeah.
It is involved. It supposedly is going to involve Han, Luke, and Leia, and they're recast everybody. Carrie Fisher is in her late 60s, right?
Yeah, and she doesn't look like Carrie Fisher anymore.
She has been through a life. Yeah. Mark Hamill is looks like Luke Skywalker down 10 miles of dirt road.
Mm-hmm.
Harrison Ford is an old man too, but he's still fucking Harrison Ford.
Yeah, he's still a movie star, right?
Yeah, he's still a movie star. I'm kind of sad that we're after they make this prequel after they make this sequel trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
I hope they go back and make some trilogies and they recast, because I like the characters of Luke, Han, and Leia. And they don't need to do the expanded universe shit. I don't need to see the Timothy Zahn trilogy, although that would be awesome. I don't need to see the Shadows of the Empire or whatever. I would just like to see those characters. And J.J. Abrams seems like he's the reboot king. Recast Han, Luke, and Leia as like younger, successful movie stars or unknown stars or whatever, and remake a whole bunch of stuff within that universe. The post Return of the Jedi, Empire still strong, Republic still struggling. There's so many
Luke's
stories to be told there. Yeah, Luke's the burgeoning badass, rekindling the fire of the Jedi through the galaxy.
Well, then you get into CG actor territory, and we've seen how that's gone recently.
Why do you say? I'm saying recast them, like Chris Pine
so just
as
totally
James
won't,
T. Kirk.
Totally won't look like Mark Hamill.
Do you
but
think
they'll
Chris,
call him Luke Skywalker?
Do you think Chris Pine does not look like James Kirk?
Sure, but you're saying let's go directly after they're an adult actor. Like it's different when you say, okay, this guy is 20 plus years younger.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying let's go right after Return of the Jedi and go into some stories here?
Yeah. And you just recast Luke.
It would
get
be
someone
really
that looks
weird having someone who doesn't look like Luke.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, Chris Pine doesn't look like William Shatner, even though they're the same age and all that.
Yeah, but that's a reboot of the series, right? That's not like that's like a remake of the series.
Okay, does it bother you that James Bond doesn't look like the same man?
No, but I don't know why.
I'm saying that's what I'm talking about. Turn Star Wars into James Bond, reboot that shit, and tell me the post-Empire stories. Like, that's the other thing. I'm kind of excited about this, but it's going to be a bunch of characters I don't know and a setting I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of tread on the Han, Luke, and Leia tires.
Oh, yeah.
See what Ackbar's doing, that big trap-smelling pussy. What the hell?
Okay. Because he won't go in and attack the Death Star himself? I mean,
the funny thing about watching Return of the Jedi as an adult is the realization that from the moment they hyperspace to the Death Star 2, everything Ackbar says is we need to get the fuck out of here.
Oh, okay.
Our cruisers can't repel firepower. It's a trap. We've got to go. All craft, prepare to retreat. Every word out of his fucking mouth.
Did you come here to fight or not?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, man.
I mean, the situation changed when he flew
in
there. He's like, oh, God, the shield's still up. We're going to get out of here.
Yeah. We're going to be fried calamari. Did you come? Did you come to fight or not? If it wasn't for the A-Wing guy crashing his ride into the executor, y'all would have died. And he's I don't know. He acted depressed when it happened. Maybe he's a double agent, Ackbar.
Maybe.
It's a
I know he
trap.
Goes on to bigger and better things in the EU. So.
He does. He's the grand fucking Alliance Admiral. Probably not a real. While we're talking about space battles.
Next to Mon Mothma. Does he take her position?
Mon Mothma dies in the EU.
I know. When she dies, does he
I
take over
Leia
for her?
Took over.
I thought so, too. Yeah, so he's not as high of a mucky muck as we thought.
That's one thing about that.
Maybe in the military.
As an adult, the one thing that bothers me with the Star Wars novels is no one ever dies. That was one of the shocking things about the New Jedi Order is that they killed Chewbacca.
Yeah. The main characters never die.
Which Chewbacca gets it rough. Like, the end of this movie, there's another funny thing to do as an adult.
I have not read these books. I don't know
I'm talking about the Chewbacca just gets killed.
New Jedi Order?
In the New Jedi Order.
Chewbacca's dead?
Is that the Yuuzhan Vong? I think that's the New Jedi Order series. Huh. Yeah, he dies in the first one. Okay. Chewie, at the end of this movie, you can kind of see him. They call him up on stage. He's brushed out his fur.
Uh-huh.
Luke's looking right good in his gold shirt. Han's got his Kentucky Fried Space Cowboy. collar on. He needs a bolo tie. And, you know, like, Han gets the medal, and Chewie's like, all right, that's cool, you know. Luke gets his medal, and Chewie's like, all right, right on. Here's my big moment. Stand tall.
Get out the third medal.
Pride of Kashyyyk. And it's, he doesn't get a medal.
He doesn't.
I swear to God, his growling at when everyone turns around is him just being, this is bullshit. What kind of racist bullshit is
this? You're going to stand here and let this happen?
The only non-human. I talked Han. I guilt-tripped Han's ass into coming back to save this fucking scrawny-ass farm boy.
I brokered the deal in the first place.
My
give me
furry
some credit.
Ass was just as much on the line as this guy. He gets a fucking medal and I get nothing?
Yeah.
That is horseshit. That's what he said in Wookiees.
If it wasn't for my life debt, I wouldn't even be in this room right now.
Our life debt is over.
You paid in full.
I get a medal or the life debt is over. Yeah, man. It cracks me up
awesome.
Every because he's just sitting there. Aah!
Yeah. This is also the one scene, I think, where Luke looks better than Han. Because, like you said, Han's got this weird collar thing going on. Looks like a fucking Western farmer.
Han looks like he fits in a stormtrooper outfit. Han's not wearing a desert dress. He's not wearing a gaudy orange
flight
suit. Well,
it's because he fully buttons up his shirt and his vest, and he's got to get loose with that. Just get all that shit.
He needs
like,
to get his cool driving gloves on.
Yeah, whereas Luke's got an awesome yellow, like, biker-looking jacket.
Yeah.
Wearing some good pants, some boots.
Outdoes him.
Yeah.
Leia's looking outdoes right, on. Too, at the end of this movie.
Yeah, for sure. She's in her
Carrie Fisher made a
robes.
Man out of young Aaron. Like, she's... she's like, the you know, okay. This is the first time you realize that, like, oh my God, girls are nice to look at.
Oh, okay.
Like, you know, I was
like
8 or 9 when Return of the Jedi came out, and I just was not prepared to handle the bikini.
You're right. It's the bikini.
You just don't know what to do. Like, there's like feelings you can't even describe or put in the words. There's feel surging through you. Like, what's going on? My pants aren't fitting right.
Is this the Force?
I've heard so much about it. Can we talk about Porkins?
Yes, we can.
The fat X-Wing pilot's canonical name...
It's Jack
Porkins. Porkins.
Assholes.
Really, Lucas.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame. Poor Porkins.
It's like, you know, I feel like the other pilots, like, refuse to answer his calls unless he uses the, like, fat-ass five. I'm not going to say it, you bastards. What was that? What else? Yeah. I like that Darth Vader personally pilots a TIE fighter.
Yes, Darth Vader's hit squad is badass.
Underrated moment of the movie. I mean, Vader could have just bugged off the Death Star when Tarkin was unreasonably confident.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how many TIE fighters do you think the Death Star's got? Like 1,000? 5,000?
Probably more, yeah.
100,000? Yeah. He can't scramble a couple wings, like 100 of those, 1,000 of those, to just utterly crush the rebels.
Well, they do a good job of stressing the point that they just don't think this is a threat at all.
And he's just so prideful and so arrogant.
Yeah. An X-Wing or two is not going to take this thing down. How?
But
send a couple to take him out whenever. I don't care.
And it's not just Vader has his own private TIE fighter. He's got his own TIE fighter type.
Special design, yeah.
That looks like a beefier, cooler version of the others. He's obviously got... Like you pointed out, you know, those two pilots, he just didn't come up and grab two random TIE fighter pilots.
Oh, no.
Those are his honor guard TIE fighter pilots. They're the best of the best. He's probably handpicked these guys. He doesn't even wear a damn suit. He's got his own, you know, samurai deal. He's got his robe tucked in the back. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, got his gangster lean on. He's fiddling with dials. He's like feathering the throttle. He's like really fucking driving that thing.
Yeah.
And he's slaughtering the other rebel pilots. It's awesome.
Yeah. And that's one thing where I like what they did with the prequels.
Yeah.
As far as Anakin showing off his piloting skills and his just physical prowess.
Sure.
You believe that based on the prequels, he would actually be out there piloting his own shit. He enjoys it.
Sure.
He's not just good at it, he really loves it.
Yeah, like he could send a bunch of TIE fighters out there, but he wants to get, you know, it's like how many times does he get to stretch his legs?
Yeah.
You know, it's like he's all sex nuts because he got to kill Obi-Wan. He's jacked with adrenaline. He's not done killing yet. He's got to get out in that TIE fighter.
He goes easy on Wedge though. Real easy.
Wedge is a bit of a puss, right?
I think
he's a bit of an Ackbar.
Uh-huh.
Like his TIE fighter, his X-Wing got a boo-boo. Does he, you know, and we're 30 seconds from his entire political movement that he believes and he's willing to die for getting destroyed, being blasted to atoms. Mm-hmm. And he gets a boo-boo and he has to pull out. He can't, like,
stick with it, maybe be a human shield for the last hope of the rebels.
Or ram Darth Vader's craft with his own. Like, he's just going to, like, sorry, can't do more,
or,
goodbye.
Yeah, bug out and then come in behind like the Millennium Falcon does later on.
Yeah.
Like, try some of that.
Yeah, no, Wedge is much like Boba Fett.
He's a fair weather pilot.
His legend has grown in the EU, and it doesn't. I don't know that the on screen stuff warrants it. I mean,
yeah.
All he's done in the trilogy is run away from the Death Star, say, "Whoa, that got him," and that's it. Did he do even anything in Return of the Jedi?
I don't think so.
Lock S foils and attack pattern. He might have said that. Those are his contributions, and that's his reputation for badass elite pilot.
Yeah, apparently. I do have to say, a lot of this stuff, while we're talking about the battles, a lot of this stuff still holds up. I mean, the space battles, yeah, they've been updated, but I think even the originals held up so well. Like, there's so much of the original stuff that's in there that just still looks good.
The holo chess. You can't improve the holo chess.
What you pointed out while we were watching is the animations in the battle, like the schematics of the Death Star.
I was expecting that to look totally Pong.
Yeah.
And it does.
But it looks like schematics for a big machine.
That's the shit that they, like, if they're doing a heist in Ocean's 11, they go wireframe and break it down and zoom in and go, and they did all that stuff. And luckily they chose to render it that way because it looks awesome.
Yeah. And I think that's about the only way they could render it at that time.
Yeah.
But yeah, it still holds up. That, and I even think the look of the command centers holds up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you got all these boards where they're drawing
the plexiglass
with these,
and
these dry erase markers and
the
stuff.
The light markers, the like lightsaber basically. Versions of dry erase marker.
Pretty much. And I thought that was cool. I could definitely see them still using that.
Yeah.
I don't know. A lot of this movie holds up surprisingly well, 40 years plus, you know?
And I think by the time you get to Empire, it's just rock solid. In fact, when the special editions are much more troubling in Empire and Return of the Jedi. Because Empire and Return of the Jedi just doesn't need it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the Sly Snoodles band or that whole cantina dance and Boba Fett macking on whores. And it just, it's not necessary. It detracts from the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But what else? Oh,
there are so many things that I won't talk about because everyone's talked about them. Like, you know, what a great villain Darth Vader is.
Sure.
And we're not going to go real in-depth on John Williams' score, even though it's phenomenal.
Right.
Everybody on the planet has talked about those.
Here's something that not everybody on the planet has talked about.
Okay.
Luke gets back to Yavin 4, the Rebels' secret base. He's climbing down the stairs from his X-Wing. Princess Leia runs up to him and exclaims, "Luke!" And he says, a lot of people say he actually broke character and accidentally exclaimed Carrie.
I thought so, too.
And it made the movie. When we watched it, I said, I want to kind of settle this. I used to be strongly on the Carrie version.
Me too.
That was when I was watching on VHS. I feel like this version, when you hear it on the THX remastered shit, that he said, it just kind of is like, it's basically, who is that? Howard Dean? Is a Howard Dean scream.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't know
a generic squeal of excitement.
If that was changed in the special edition or not.
Could be.
Potentially. Because I always thought it said Carrie, too, but it definitely doesn't sound like it when I rewatch it. Let's talk about the relationship between astromechs and X-Wings. Because I'm kind of curious what the function of an astromech droid in an X-Wing is.
And that's one of the things, you know, talking about prequels, Ralph McQuarrie versus not Ralph McQuarrie. Mm-hmm. Astromechs do not fit in a Naboo fighter.
Yeah.
If you take the silhouette of an astromech and you lay it over the Naboo fighter, that little scoop, their body will not fit in there. And it's horse shit. And if you built a real life model, I feel like you'd figure that out right away. The original stuff, so at first I'm like, well, that's cool. You got an astromech that plugs in and he apparently helps calculate hyperspace drives, but he's also like a little engineer.
Yeah.
He can get out and crawl on your ship and repair stuff and like boost your deflector shields and lock down your stabilizers and whatever you need to do. But then
my big question is, so if the only thing on an X-Wing that can calculate a hyperspace jump is an astromech droid, then so you're putting the hyperspace drives into all of these X-Wings?
Yes. That was one of the big, I mean, this is all EU, like role-playing guide and start, you know, the TIE Fighter and X-Wing technical manuals. But apparently that was kind of a big philosophical difference between the Empire and the Rebels. The Rebels wanted to build very tough, survivable, flexible starships.
Sure.
Or fighters.
Just fall apart.
So they had hyperspace drives to let them do like deep strike attacks. And they had shields, so they're more survivable. Okay. Where the Empire wanted fast, maneuverable, heavy hitters. So the TIE fighters famously don't have shields.
But big weapons.
And no hyperspace drive. Mm-hmm. Although Darth Vader's apparently was outfitted with one, or he'd be in for a hell of a long flight.
So do you have to have an astromech in order to pilot an X-Wing?
Again,
it seems weird that you wouldn't allow the astromech to do all of the computing. Why make the redundant systems that the AI on the astromech would have?
Like, if you didn't have a astromech droid, if it was that integral, then you couldn't even fly the ship.
Yeah.
I feel like it's an expanded universe answer, but I feel like the answer knocking around my head is that you can fly an X-Wing, but like an astromech droid is considered a combat multiplier.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you might be twice as good as a pilot with an astromech helping you out and tweaking your ship as you need it and doing repairs and stuff. Whereas, you know, if you're just like moving a X-Wing from one base to another and just flying, you know, or training and stuff like that, you don't need one. The Z-95 Headhunters
have to be cheaper.
Yeah.
Than X-Wing. So you would think they would have at least one astromech for every X-Wing.
Yeah, and they're modular.
So why even make them fly at all without an astromech?
Yeah.
And then, I don't know. We're getting really deep into the economies of Star Wars, but...
And you're buying an astromech to work on a moisture farm?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, if you buy a translation droid, I guess...
I mean, I wouldn't want a droid with the rolls in a desert.
A desert?
That seems like a bad choice.
Mm.
I don't know.
That's true. What else we got to talk about?
Why don't any droids hover? Land speeders hover. Why can't droids hover?
R2 does hover in the prequel trilogy.
Uh-huh.
I think that's the prequel trilogy, that's a really cool idea, because I fully buy an astromech droid could do that.
Okay.
And that's how I used to play with my R2 action figures. I'd use those things as like, you know, he's like a little thruster thing, you know.
Uh-huh.
So I like that.
Right.
The action figures are really cool growing up, because the R2 units came with like a little third foot that would fit up into the socket. They were hollow on the inside, so you could do them in the stand-up configuration, or you could slide that wheel in and do the little wheeled configuration.
Hmm. Cool.
And there was like a version of C-3PO that like came apart, so you could load him up in a net and have him...
Put him in your backpack.
Having Chewbacca. Yeah, and Chewbacca had a little backpack that would hold him all.
Awesome.
So many cool. Those Kenner toys are so cool. We actually talked at length on the Lunch with Jim and Aaron about it this week. What else, man?
I don't know. Like I said, I don't want to talk too much about the stuff that everyone's talked about. We did a lot of nitpicking, but I feel like
came
I
from
said,
love.
Yeah, it does. I all of the things that I love about this movie are very visceral. Very much like I'm engrossed in the story and I want to be there, and this feels like a real interesting world. That kind of stuff, which is harder to talk about than to, you know, laugh about some problems.
Yeah.
Laugh about some nitpicks.
Yeah. And, you know, you can get, if you want to get to like real in-depth stuff, you can listen to the DVD commentary or read all the different books that's been read about. This is our personal experience with the movie. I had a really good point I want to make. Oh, like I haven't even said, like, I feel like the biggest flaw in this movie is the death that the Star Destroyer didn't shoot down or interdict with the many, many, many wings of TIE fighters they have, the life support pod, the escape pod.
Oh, right at the very beginning?
Right at the very beginning. It's like, there's no life signs, let it go. Whatever. I'm sure Darth Vader won't choke me to death for this decision.
Right. I don't know. He's a little choke happy this month.
It is also kind of the other thing is like when you go back and consider the prequel trilogy and how powerful and right hand Mandy Vader was to the Emperor from the get go.
Yeah.
It's awful interesting that these moffs around the Death Star table are just so flip with him.
Yeah.
Like, do you not know who the hell Darth Vader is? By Return of the Jedi, he's got guys eating out of his palm. Like, he goes on the Death Star and Grand Moffs are shitting their pants.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I don't believe that is the first time he has ever choked someone in front of them.
No, but
they should know
like
better.
They should know. When I first saw it, I used to think, well, maybe he's kind of like he's risen through the ranks or he's been a much bigger secret. But the prequels make it pretty clear that, no, everybody. Also, it's kind of weird that less than 20 years after Revenge of the Sith, no one knows what the fuck a Jedi is. Like, Han is openly skeptical of their abilities.
Yes, you're right. He is openly skeptical. A man who lived through the era of the Jedi.
He was 10 years old. Like, I think he's supposed to be 30 in A New Hope. He was like 10 years old during the reign of the Jedi.
Yeah, so he would have been fascinated with the Jedi. There are these badass people out there who can do these cool
things. They're real-life superheroes, yeah.
Yeah. I think there might be an excuse like, oh, well, look at them now. They're gone. What happened to him if they were so powerful?
That's true.
Maybe he's a doubter on that level where it's like, Jedi. Yeah. Welcome to 20 years ago. I got a blaster now.
I'm just saying the Hokey religion is an ancient weaponry loses a little bit zing when you realize that these were the state police 20 years ago of the Old Republic. And like a lot of people are like, well, you know, it's probably some kind of Stalinist 1984 campaign from the Emperor who maybe even used the Force to wipe people's minds to get rid of that. But that doesn't make sense Tatooine, because that's a border. Like, the Empire has the very, very thinnest of influence on that system. It's so far out. It's on the Outer Rim.
Yeah, that's the thing. That part of the story, like, the it's a shame that the prequels did so much damage to the original trilogy.
Yeah.
On that level, because that storyline crumbles if you say, okay, the prequels are canon.
Yeah.
The idea that the Jedi were systematically hunted and eradicated over a long period of time, which is what I thought happened before I saw the prequels.
Right.
I thought it was years and years and years, maybe hundreds of years hunting these Jedis and killing them all. Ancient weapons and hokey rituals and all that stuff make sense in that context. It does. You're right. It doesn't make sense in the context where 20 years ago, these guys were everywhere.
And Obi-Wan, as a 67-year-old man, if he was a Jedi in his prime in his late 20s, early 30s, if 40 years have gone past, you start thinking that maybe people will forget. But
the term
it explicit,
ancient about their weapons, I get, they're swords, effectively.
Sure.
But it seems like that whole mythos just crumbles under the weight of the prequels.
Right. What else can we talk about? Why don't they remake an X-Wing or TIE Fighter video game? Why is the space sim, and don't get me started on Eve, because it's not the same thing.
No.
Why is that effectively dead? X-Wing and TIE Fighter were fucking rad.
That's why they don't make them, because it's effectively dead. As to why it's effectively dead, I don't know.
It's because
you need fancy. I would play one.
I mean, I played a couple flight sims with even a gamepad, and it's a hell of a lot better experience than, like, two-button Gravis, I'll tell you that much.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, I feel like we need, maybe when Disney, now that Disney's got the license, we'll have a new X-Wing or TIE Fighter.
Maybe. I feel like Disney is probably a company that goes the other way with Pod Racing and Clone Wars games and...
Stuff was so primitive. Like, TIE Fighter was, like, shaded polygons. Even textures. Do you know how incredible an X-Wing or TIE Fighter would be if they made one now?
Yeah, it'd be fantastic.
I would go buy a flight stick for that. Do they still make flight sticks?
I don't know. Does SciTech still exist? Are they a thing anymore?
What was the... was it Thrustmaster?
Thrustmaster, yeah.
Where they had the dedicated throttle and the F-16 hit.
Yeah, SciTech's got those. SciTech is like modular and they look all like future robot kind of stuff.
No, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. They look like carbon fiber and they're all angular. And
yeah.
They look like something Will Smith would use to drive the ID-4 fighter.
Uh-huh. People would probably be angry if I didn't bring up Rogue Squadron as a good... albeit arcadey.
Arcadey, yeah.
You're right. It's not a flight sim. It's not a flight sim. It's arcadey, but it is a fun space shooter.
It was cool, though.
It's really good. Yeah. The Star Wars arcade game is really good.
Oh, yeah, sure. There's one of those at King's Island.
Oh, nice.
They got a Remember the 80s like store, and where you can go buy like Thundercat shirts and shit, and they got the Star Wars, the trilogy arcade in there.
One of my girlfriend's favorite slot machines to play is the Star Wars one.
Oh, I bet that's fun.
At Harrah's.
They're really cool Star Wars pinball machines back in the day, too.
Oh, yeah.
One thing, why haven't they ever been able to nail a Star Wars MMO? Like, I guess there's definitely fans of the Old Republic one that's out now. Mm-hmm. But why can't you have, like, a crazy fusion of, like, Privateer and Elite or, what is that new one, Galactic Citizen?
You're right.
Starship Citizen?
Star Citizen.
Star Citizen. And, like, a first-person shooter with, like, some of the Dark Forces, what was that, Jedi Knight mechanics, where you could, like, do lightsaber combat, credible lightsaber combat.
Yeah.
Those are fun games, too. Like, why can't they just meld that shit together, make it into...
Force Unleashed had some cool stuff, too.
Yes. Make it a persistent world and rake in billions of dollars.
I don't know. I mean, I definitely feel like that would be an ambitious game, like a big game, but not... at the level where they couldn't do it.
Do you think the world just becomes fundamentally silly when everyone's a bounty hunter or a Jedi or a smuggler, like literally everyone you meet?
Probably.
So you'd have to also have like this giant,
like,
persistent...
MMO may not work. Like if they were to do a single player where I am essentially Han, where I play Han's storyline but not Han.
Yeah.
Where I play my own smuggler starting from nothing.
Uh-huh.
There are gambling mechanics where you go sit in cantinas and play Sabacc, and you get a droid that you can upgrade and a ship that you can upgrade, and you can buy better ships, and you go on missions for smuggling shit, and you get in dogfights. That would be amazing.
And maybe amazing. There's some co-op multiplayer, so you can have some friends that do the belly and Top Guns, or
kid, get in there, don't get cocky, kid.
That's right.
There's still two more out there.
That's right.
That would be cool. That would be real cool. Like, maybe you play... Maybe it could be like a friends list thing where you just let them jump in to a game while you're in a dogfight.
Yeah.
They can jump in and help you out.
Yeah. Or you could do like, you can even run sessions where like, this is the space worm session.
And they could have a mini game where you're scraping Minox off the
air. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. You accidentally hug each other and then you embrace and exchange a passionate kiss. Don't get excited, princess. I think it's about time to wrap this thing up.
Uh-huh.
I'm pretty much tapped out.
Yeah, for all the nitpicking we've done and the fun we've had, definitely my favorite trilogy of all time. Nothing comes even close, except maybe Indiana Jones, which is another George Lucas joint. Those are all really good as well.
I don't know. The Temple of Doom sucked. I don't like Temple of Doom.
Yeah, it's not great.
Don't like it.
The other two, man. The other two are
amazing.
Yeah.
And we're gonna pretend like Indiana Jones 4 never happened.
Sure. Yeah. When I'm talking about trilogies, I'm talking about as they were kind of the span that they were originally being made in.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm not gonna say that Godfather is not a better movie, but like
the trilogy?
When we talk about trilogy terms, and also when you talk about just my personal connection to the movie.
Yeah.
You know, if I was 30 years old when The Godfather came out, or... Yeah, I mean, you can't... I mean, that's the thing. Like, it's so rare. Because I have fond movies of, like, fond memories of the Transformer TV series and the G.I. Joe TV series and, like, Kevin J. Anderson Star Wars novels. You go back and visit them as an adult, and they're shit. It's so rare to have something that you love so much as a child hold up to adult scrutiny.
Yeah.
And even kind of get deeper. And yes, you can pick the flaws and nits too, but that's fun as well.
Sure. Yeah, I think Star Wars is that for me. There are flaws, but overall the story is so compelling. The characters are so compelling. The world itself is so compelling that I overlook a lot of that stuff and just enjoy it for what it is. Is that it?
I think so.
Okay. Well, we want to... thank Andrew Mount once again for commissioning this thing.
Yes, thank you, Andrew. This has been awesome. It's been a great Friday.
Yep. Yeah. It's always great when we sit down and talk about stuff that we love in the middle of Walking Dead season. So thanks a lot for that.
Trolling the Walking Dead fans.
Got to. If you want to commission a podcast of your own, where can they go, Aaron?
Subbable.com/baldmove. It's the brass ring position. But there's lots of other cool things you can do, too. You can have me draw a picture. You can talk to us on telephone. You can have us do a bunch of different... you can dedicate a podcast. Mm-hmm. And we got a huge back catalog. Favorite Breaking Bad episode. Dedicate it to a loved one.
Yeah.
Cool Christmas present. Or a nightmarish one, because they're like, Jim who? Aaron who? And then, you know, you can have, everyone can have a good laugh over the eggnog and under the mistletoe.
Sure. All right. Well, that's it.
Thanks, Andrew. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.
We'll be right back.